And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Hello and welcome to the show we call Podcast UFO. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and we're coming at you live like every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. If you're listening live, please join in our chat room at podcastufo.com. I'd like to take a second to thank all of those who have donated to help our show. We have some bandwidth use that's costing some money, and I really, really appreciate that. Well, we have another great show for you tonight. Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds is coming on with the news in just a second. And tonight we have a guest, Randall Nickerson, to talk about his upcoming film and the Zimbabwe Ariel School Encounter. And to me, this is one of the all-time important cases that there is out there. We'll be talking about the 62 school children that were involved and what their lives are like now. It happened on September 16th, 1994, so we just passed the 20th anniversary. So I'm pretty excited to talk about this. And Alejandro, how are you doing today?
Hello, I am doing good.
Good, and you passed the news over to me today. There's some great things were happening last week. Well, I don't want to say great things. I mean, kind of interesting, exciting things. Yeah. So why don't you enlighten us?
Yeah, so some really cool stuff. The hot one today I'll start off with, and this is a video of a UFO over the protests in Hong Kong. So this is a really cool video, and it's starting to spread all over the place. Lee Spiegel from the Huffington Post just wrote about it today. I tipped him off on this one. But essentially, the BBC was covering the protests in Hong Kong, and on one of the – and this was on Tuesday – and a gentleman in South Lancashire in Blantyre, Scotland, was watching the BBC, and he recorded this section where he saw a UFO. And in this video that he posted, you can see this bright object come from the left. Some people thought it came from in between the buildings, but it is in front of the buildings, which matters. And it comes in. It looks like it's going to the top of this building, and the guy thinks it landed on this building, and then it shot straight up into the sky. On the video, you can tell the light actually isn't landing on the video, or on the building. It's in front of the building. And the reason that's important is because some of the analysts, such as I had Ben Hansen look at it from Factor Fake, I had Mark D'Antonio look at it from MUFON.
Yep.
They both felt it could be a drone and that it's just closer, or, you know, a drone with a BBC did have a drone there and they were taking video, and they think that's what it could be. You know, my objection was this thing shoots up straight up at a really fast rate of speed. And their objection is, well, it could be closer than you think, and it could be flying up and towards the person taking the video, which would make it look like it's shooting straight up. And I was skeptical, but then, you know, some people posted on Facebook some videos of these quadcopters flying around and kind of this stunt pilot guy, and they can do some incredible stuff. They can move extremely fast. So it is possible that that's what it is, I suppose. But the video is very shocking, very cool, and of course you could see that at openminds.tv. Have you been able to take a look at this one?
I did, you know, a few days ago, and I saw, you know, the comments posted on it as well. And by the way, we have links to this in our show notes right on our website, and it'll shoot you right over to openminds.tv and with the stories. This reminded me of the UFO over the Dome of the Rock, you know, the way it shot up. This thing shot up really, really fast, and, you know, that's the one thing that stood out to me more than anything else as far as it being a drone. I just can't picture a drone. I know you're talking about the angles and everything, but I certainly can't picture a drone shooting up like that. So there's no question that this is not a CGI thing?
Nobody thus far, and those are very capable analysts, you know, Ben yes. and Mark, mm-hmm. they don't feel that it is CGI, that it looks like it is legit. So, you know what? I have a hard time with the same part that you're talking about. So I really want to, you know, be definitive when it comes to a drone. But I look at the video, and it's just so strange the way it shoots up that no, hopefully Mark will, because he does this a lot. He likes to demonstrate what he's talking about.
That's
and
right.
Hopefully he'll do that. I know he has some quadcopters, and I'd like to see him do that so we can see that they can duplicate this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great about Mark. He likes to replicate things to see mm-hmm. if it can be done. So what else is happening?
This is a great story. I really like this. So we had talked about the Ministry of Defense, I believe, in the 18 files they found.
Yes.
There's this story. Well, it turns out John Burroughs had messaged me, and he's like, you know, where did these files come from? These are my files, and how did this get on the MOD and stuff like this? So it turns out, this is really strange, talking with John Burroughs, he's one of the witnesses to the Rendlesham Forest, and he's been doing a lot of work in some FOIAs with our government and with the UK government to find out more. He has been sick, he's got congenital heart disease, and he thinks that his UFO sighting was related. He's been trying to get his medical records, and it happens that at first he went to go seek this, and they said that he wasn't in the Air Force during that time when he certainly was. Really strange. So he had to go to get help from Senator McCain, his senator out here. They finally were able to acknowledge that he did join the Air Force in 79, but they told him, we'll probably never get your medical records from 79 to 82. The UFO sighting happened in 1980. And the reason the 18 files is important, because it was a FOIA that he did back in December that got the MOD to say, okay, we found 18 more files, we're going to release those. Well, a UK gentleman named Andy Russell read a story about that and did another FOIA, and that's what the MOD responded to the other day.
Wow, unbelievable. So it's funny how more missing files, as they say.
Yeah, but what's even more mysterious about these files is that Burroughs released on the 15th a press release about him trying to find this stuff, his problem getting his medical records and everything. And the MOD on the 16th posted on their website a response to this Andy Russell guy saying that we're going to release these 18 files. So it's really weird that the MOD only posted on the 16th that they were going to release the files. They only posted their response to Andy Russell, even though they had told Burroughs in December they were going to do this, but they didn't post Burroughs, their response to Burroughs, and they post their response the day after he sends out a press release to a lot of UK media. Oh. So really weird. So it was really his press release that caused the Daily Star to write a story. So when I first asked him and Nick about this, Nick Pope, they were kind of confused because I was referring to the MOD site, and we finally cleared all this up. So it is really strange. But what Jim Burroughs also found was a UK document from that was created by Defence Intelligence, a very secretive intelligence organization in the UK. They had a UFO report that they released that they did in 2000, but they didn't release it to the public until 2006. Burroughs went through this report, and he found a section on UAP radiation. Oh. They were at this time using the phrase UAP, which is unidentified aerial phenomena, mm-hmm. instead of UFO. Burroughs thinks they did that, so if you search for UFO documents, you wouldn't get their new UAP documents. But this thing talked about UAP radiation and speculated that the people in Rendlesham, those witnesses, could have been exposed to a long period of UAP radiation that caused some effects on them. So wow. Really interesting that he found this as well. The whole thing really does smack of conspiracy, you know, and I'm
sure
not
does.
One of those guys to jump to that.
Oh, I am.
Yeah, so, but, you know, there are a lot of questions that had to be answered. How did they conveniently lose his medical files? They also lost James Peniston's medical files.
Right.
Also was
I heard
a witness.
This. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So really mysterious. So we got a lot more details about this in the story, and we're going to be following John and his fight to get all this information.
Yeah, I wish both of them really good luck, because if they are indeed suffering, you know, from something that happened while they were in the military, they should be taken care of.
Right. So pretty crazy stuff.
It is. And what's our final story tonight?
Final story is about a UFO sighting in Missouri, and it's just kind of cool. I mean, it happened, the first one happened in July, where these people said they saw this object bigger than a house in a field. Some guy actually flagged them down. They saw this craft in the air. Some guy was walking his dog, flagged him down, and said, "Look at that." So they looked, they followed it, they saw it landing landed in this field, so it was really interesting. So the Missouri MUFON has been looking into it, and they also got a third witness, and this gentleman is an airline pilot who wanted to remain anonymous, who confirmed that he saw the same object, and that now, this week, there's a third witness. Now, and this is a state trooper. Mm. However, this happened on August 16th in Joplin, Missouri, and it just is very similar. This guy, you know, saw a craft, and it was in this field, and just a very similar sighting, but in August. So it's just kind of interesting that Missouri is having these sightings that are similar by very credible people.
Yep.
So they've got kind of a flap going on there. And really, for the last, 3 years, Missouri is all of a sudden a hot spot. I mean, they weren't so much a hot spot years ago, but they're getting a lot more strange reports out there in Missouri. So I've been following this for a while. I don't know if you've had them on, but Debbie Ziegelmeyer is the MUFON state director out there, and the assistant state director is Margie Kay. I've talked to them both, and they've both done some really interesting investigating out there.
Wow. No, I haven't had them on. And did anyone try to check to see if there's any trace evidence on this one they in particular
yeah.
they saw landing?
From what I understand, there has not been trace evidence discovered at this point.
Yeah, wow. But interesting. They haven't really explored Missouri yet, so they're checking it out. That's what it's about.
Yeah, and I should mention that there were effects to a couple people's vehicles.
Wow. Where, like electrical effects?
Yeah, one wouldn't start, and then another one had a strange static noise that started coming over his speakers.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, sounds like close encounters.
That's right. Hey, we'll see you next week, Alejandro. Thanks so much for today's news.
All right. Thanks, man. Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. So hang in there. Right after the music break, we're coming back with Randall Nickerson. Randy Nickerson, how are you?
Hey, good, Martin. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us. Before we get into the aerial school encounter, can you give the listening audience first a little bit background about yourself? You're a filmmaker. You're an amazing photographer. You've gone all over the world, but can you fill us in on your background, if you would?
Sure. I started in actually theater and piano was my majors in college, and got started to make documentaries in short form docs back in 1999. And other than that, a piano technician, love to work on cars, and
Roundabout guy.
I like to understand my world.
Yeah. And so for the person out there that has not really looked into this encounter, how about you talk about it in a nutshell? And I mentioned this in the beginning. I do think this is one of the most amazing encounters in the field, and one that I've been drawn to for many years. And can you just go again for the listener that is not totally familiar with it?
Sure. I went through that same process of when the John Mack Institute approached me. Dr. John Mack was a Harvard professor of psychiatry who went to Zimbabwe when he heard about this particular case. They asked me to look at the footage and if I'd be interested in making a project out of it. And it was basically an encounter with the 62, I believe it was, that had seen a craft land in the back of their schoolyard, and two beings get out in, that were in black. And that was the story that I understood at the time. And when I saw the interviews, the John Mack's raw footage, I was immediately struck by the fact that these were children from the ages of 6 to 12 years old, all telling the same story. And, when you look at them, you can tell that they saw something for sure. As far as, their honesty, it reads really clearly on camera. So that piqued my interest about exploring, what exactly happened here? And started a 7-year investigation, essentially, which has taken me all over the world.
Well, when was the first time that you actually visited the school and actually spoke with some of the experiencers of that?
2008 was the first time I went there, and that basically was to find to visit the school to see if it was still operating, and it was, and that took quite a bit of time to sort that all out and to get there. Zimbabwe, as people may know, I don't know how many Americans actually know where Zimbabwe is, but it is it's a tricky place politically. Yes, in 08, my primary goal, other than talking to some of the teachers that were there in 94 when this event occurred, was to find the children today. And that was not an easy task because of the political situation in Zimbabwe. They moved all around the world. So the first visit, and I've visited several times since, was in 2008.
I see. Now, when you said you went all over the world, I'm assuming that you went all over the world to find and speak with these then grown, mostly children.
Yeah, they're in their mid to late 20s, early 30s now, and went to South Africa. Many had moved to South Africa and London, Europe, and Canada, the United States, Australia. It's quite a large area in which it's not like you can go to one place and find them all. That was a journey.
Now, how many were you able to actually connect with out of the 62?
I was able to connect with about 45. And I'm still, every day is I receive, not every day, but I'm always getting somebody else coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things that it is interesting about this case is that, you know, these are well-functioning, you know, people in normal life. And this is something that not just one person, one of these kids saw. This was a group of these children. So it's it lends a lot of credibility and a little less, a little bit more of a, how do you say that, a lack of fear of them coming forward. Not that I haven't had issues with people, you know, wanting to speak about it, but the fact that there were so many lends a lot of credibility, and in the present day, they're remarkable children. I mean, I'm sorry, not children, adults.
Yep.
Yep.
Now, when you've actually questioned them, are you know when you go back and you watch the tapes when John Mack was interviewing them, they're very consistent now, but there's always magic in the editing room. When you actually sought these people out and you spoke with them, were they consistent and consistent with the original story?
Yeah. And that's been the most profound thing mm-hmm. that has struck me because, you know, I'm open-minded and I also am critical. And the thing that from day one, their first interview, 3 days after the event, to today, the story has not changed. Nothing's, you know, it's that's what's clearly remarkable.
Right, yeah. Right. Now, one of them, just to talk a little bit more about the story, they commented that the beings were, like you said, dressed in black, and they had long hair and large eyes, and it looked like they were floating. And also there's some people, some of the kids that at the time thought the, I thought it was two UFOs, but I'm not sure, thought they landed. And then some thought they were just hovering. And what was your conclusion on that?
Well, you gotta remember that there was a whole playground school of children that saw different things at different times. I guess it depends on the age of the child, I guess. I've come to understand. Because the older kids tend to, I think, notice more detail. The description of the hair and the beings, you know, it kind of threw me a little bit, but it's not something that has never been reported before. According to them, the children, one of them had hair and the other one did not.
Yeah.
The one that approached him on the playground did not.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And one of the thing that I've found very dramatic when you're watching these kids talk about this situation is the messages that they were feeling that they were getting. And that one of the subjects I want to talk about is how it's affected their lives now and all that. But can you talk, that was more or less a consistent message too, that basically that we may destroy ourselves through technology, which is a pretty common theory, but nothing a young child would think of, that you wouldn't think about it, and that we're harming the planet. And apparently these kids weren't influenced by any peers or parents or anything like that. That was just, like, again, you said 3 days after the event, they were coming out with a pretty consistent thoughts of this, that they were actually thinking these things. And I believe, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one girl thought about it when she went home and not right away.
It wasn't consistent through all the children that were there. What I've come to understand is the ones that were closest to that being that approached them were the ones that had that messages about our planet and what we were doing to it. I mean, for people in Africa at that time to be, I mean, the adults didn't even, weren't even talking about it, because pollution and at that particular time in Africa was not a discussion. I mean, it's a very different place. The wildlife and basically pollution was not an issue or a talking point at the time. And the fact that the kids were talking about it after this was pretty profound. And, you know, many of the investigators that worked on this case were very, till this day, some of the ones that are still alive have been very, that haunts them to this day, what the children talked about.
Wow. Speaking of that, did any of the teachers... I know there was, a couple of teachers that actually saw something. Did they ever talk about any thoughts of the same?
That's a good question that I can't really answer completely. I do know the answer to that. let me just tell you about, that whole time, it wasn't just... what happened at the aerial school? That whole week of September 16th, that entire week, there were sightings all around southern Africa and Zimbabwe at that time, on every single day that week. So there is a larger story here that hasn't really been talked about. I managed to interview about 70 or 80 people who had separate incidents surrounding the aerial school, which lends a lot of credibility to the event that the children at aerial saw. So, yeah, there is a bigger story. Some things I'm kind of waiting to share when the film comes out. But there was, you know, daytime sightings of this silver disc shaped craft that whole week, which is stunning. I mean, when I went over there, I couldn't believe it. I was reasonably skeptical, and I was shocked when I started to hear, what about this other day and this other person? And then I started investigating that, and one person led me to another person, and pilots, paramedics. I mean, the witnesses, as far as credibility, were beyond reproach, in my opinion. There's a larger story than just the aerial story.
Yeah. For the first time I read that today, that there were sightings before that. Now we have a message board at podcastufo.com. If you're listening live, you can jump over and ask our guests some questions. We have a number of questions up there now for you. First of all, they're asking if the beings communicated, but we know that they felt messages, but they didn't. There wasn't back and forth communication, was there?
I've never heard that.
Okay, yeah. And the next question here, are the students' recollections still vivid along with the content of the message sent?
I'd say some of them. When you're dealing with anybody, they're at different stages in their lives and dealing with this or not dealing with this. Some people tend to block things out. Some people are more open to looking at events that have occurred to them in any way. So it varies. Yeah.
Right. Now, one of the there's just a comment on the message board, but I also wondered that too. And it makes you wonder why they chose this particular site.
that's everybody, the teachers, the students, all asked that question. And, you know, some of the theories are, well, they're children, they're the next generation at the time. There's a lot of theories, but nobody really knows.
Right.
This playground was huge, by the way. This is more like a college you know, Africa, you get a lot of room in Africa and in Zimbabwe and all the countries there. And I mean, there's it's a very large estate, if you want to say. There's playground, you know, there's multiple playgrounds and playing fields and surrounded by the bush. Just wanted to say that it's a large area.
Yep. Now, does this encounter have any similarities to the one in Australia at the schoolyard?
Well, I'm not. When I read up on that case, I mean, it's very different as far because I don't think there were any actual creatures sighted.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The most similar event that it is similar with is Broadhaven, which happened in Wales in 1977. And I went to Wales also to investigate that because it was the most similar case. I don't know if you're familiar with that case.
Yes.
Where they saw a craft and also a being. So, you know, when I went there, I also interviewed the teachers and the witnesses there, and they still, to this day, have stuck to their story, which I found impressive. It's like, well, you know, they're in their 40s now, those witnesses. And, you know, these cases, those, I just want to say, like, the ridicule factor that was going on, I think it's getting better the more time goes by. But at that time, you know, the witnesses to that event were pretty shy to talk with me because they'd already been through so much, you know, of people, you know, press spinning stories and this and that. You know, these things are hard to believe, but that doesn't mean they're not, there's not something to them, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's a huge thing that really us, all of us as a culture have to really address. Like, there's so much we don't know. And one of the stories that just strikes me, I'll never forget it, because I spent a year in Africa, and I would ask the tribal, you know, chiefs and the different tribes, the Shona and the Zulu, would ask them, what do you think about if there's life outside this planet? And they're like, of course.
Huh?
It's just, of course, there was no doubt or, it was just an accepted fact.
So you spent a year there. Now, a question, I'm going to sort of ask this question that's up on the message board. You know, a number of people have researched this case. What are some of the new things that you learned apart from everyone else?
Well, you mean Dr. Mack and Cynthia and...
Yes. I know you spent 7 years researching this, and we had a little chat earlier about how much research is missing from the UFO field and how important it is. So you spent 7 years researching and working on this film. So
yeah.
I know you don't want to give us a whole spoiler alert here and tell us about the film completely, but... If you can give us some of the things that you found out that weren't uncovered before, that'd be great.
Well, I think nobody really went, you know, hindsight is 20/20, and nobody went back years later to really find out the sequence of events, when the interviews of the kids were done, by whom, collected the material, all the video, basically I've been collecting information for 7 years, which is a significant amount, file cabinets at this point, and video, and anything that was done on this particular incident. I don't think anybody really explored, Cynthia did a bit, Cynthia Hind, of the surrounding events, other than Ariel at the time. But no, even Cynthia was limited on resource, as I was when I was over there, and I kept finding new people, witnesses to mainly this craft that seemed to have been around that entire week in different places. I mean, there's witnesses that, I mean, I'd love, you know, part of the plan is also to spend a little more time to particularly the people that saw it in the daylight, finding in more of them. But I think that's a whole aspect that has not been presented. I don't it's never been presented how it happened in great detail. I mean, that's why it's taken so long. I mean, there's an enormous amount of information. And, you know, this was originally supposed to be a DVD project between John Mack Institute and myself. And I took it, you know, the more I educated myself and asked questions and researched, the more I felt like this is a really incredible story. The characters involved, you know, you have Dr. John Mack, from professor of psychiatry at Harvard, interviewed the kids. You have a lot of media from all over the world that interviewed these children, and the consistency in their testimony. It's a very powerful story, and you know, originally it was supposed to be a DVD project, but this is a story I think the world should see, and that's why it's become a feature doc, and why it's taken so long.
Now, we have a question up on the message board, but I'm going to sort of answer it while I read it. is there any chance that this incident might have been staged? Remember, these are kids. But for, you know, before you even answer that, I mean, there were some adults, too, that saw this, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, it wasn't just kids. And I can understand that. It's always good, of course, to look at the skeptical side.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you have to look at the skeptical side, and you have to look at what was going on in the sky at the time, in space at the time, as far as human beings' programs, if you want to put it that way. You have to look at everything, and that's really important. I think sometimes we miss that, and how important it is to say, okay, wait, let's look at this, maybe. What if it didn't happen? What if it was mistaken identity, a hoax, and all those, or, you know, some other project? I think it's valuable to look at that. Absolutely.
Right.
I think you have to be really, you know, even-handed.
Yes, yeah. Because there will be people out there attacking you if you're not.
Sure.
That's, yep. And rightly so, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's see, one of the questions I was thinking about earlier today is, you know, these kids went through this amazing experience, and now you get a chance to actually talk to them when they're adults. And I want to know how this whole incident affected their lives. Was it, and just a generality here, was it in a positive way, in a negative way, and how about some details on that?
Okay. Well, it varies by individual. I think what I've learned through researching these events and is it depends on the person's own coping mechanisms and, you know, all the other events in their lives, their religious beliefs. I mean, it varies from a wide range to this is what happened, this is what I saw, and to some very religious families that I spoke with that felt like it was the devil. Hmm. Now, the interesting thing about that is, to me, was, well, if they felt it was the devil, it was definitely something real. You know, it was definitely something happened. It's the interpretation is different. But you know, there's just a wide variety, and you know, I've got, as much as I've been in the edit room, which is a crazy amount of time.
Yeah, we had conversations about that.
Yeah,
you've been editing like crazy for a long time.
Yeah, and you know, I really care about these people, these adult kids. You know, I really feel a lot for them. They're really good people, and I wish I have had. I will in the coming days have more contact with them. But yeah, I just, you know, I think everybody has their own different struggle with it, you know. I mean, some of the kids, it's profound. Some are afraid Some are consider it the most amazing thing that's ever, of course, ever happened to them, and think of it in very positive terms. And so it runs the gamut.
I'm going to ask a real esoteric question, even in the UFO field. Sure. Have any of them, I mean, you hear about certain things like the Allagash abductions, things like that. Has anyone changed in any type of mental state where they can do things different than most people? I know it's a real weird question, but.
Not that I'm aware of, but it's definitely, and like several of the kids say today, it's I keep calling them kids, but they're adults now. But when they look out at the universe, they're in their mind, their mindset is anything's possible after what we've seen. And that changes a person's approach to life. I mean, at a very young age, they had something happen that wasn't supposed to be possible. So I have never heard of any, you know, special gifts or anything like that. But having your perception of reality kind of blown open is in itself a kind of gift, depending on how you handle it.
I agree. And you know, it actually, I look at my own sighting like that because I probably wouldn't have paid hardly any attention to this at all, this whole subject. Another question up on the message board. I think it's a pretty good one. Have any of the grown children been revisited or seen other UFOs during their life that you're aware of?
Yes.
Wow. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, there's three or four that I've discussed it with, that particular part. I mean, I've asked them all that if there was any further events beyond what happened as a child. I don't know quite what to speak about on that. Other than that, they're not with all of them, but with some, a small group. At you know, I'd say you know a handful of them. There were recurring incidents that happened later in their lives.
Anything to do with and I don't really talk about this subject too much, but. Did any of them ever claim to have any abduction experiences?
Well, I looked into that, and I have, you know, some of them sound, there are some things that they said about what happened that makes me wonder about that. You know, the certain things that occur in the abduction scenario.
Mm-hmm. Loss of time and things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting.
Yeah, but it's again, like, it's a small percentage. But then people are, like, I have to say, like, a lot of the men that were there, you know, they're men now, of the children that were there, tend to be more reticent about talking about what happened. I find the women much more open and brave, if you want to say. And I think that's just a cultural thing.
Now let's talk about your film. First of all, does it have a working title at this point?
The working title is Aerial Phenomena.
Ah, wow. Play. And do you have an idea? I know you've been editing away forever, but do you have an idea when this may be released?
It'll definitely be released within the year.
So yeah. I'm going to make sure I stay in touch with you on that and get this, you know, right up on our website. I mean, I'm really fascinated myself by this whole thing, and I'm really very excited to watch this.
I think my goal, you know, just to tell people, like, this, you know, it's taken a long time to do it, and I wanted to really do it right, you know, tell the complete story, you know, and in the right way. I mean, in the way where it actually helps the people who went through it, because more than anybody, I want to present it to the people that witnessed it. So, because they don't know what happened, they don't know the full story, and I've been trying to understand that for a long time, and it'll be a good day to when I present it to them.
Now, when any part in this film, or do you plan to do any type of situation, or I don't even know what you would call it, like phasing from showing someone as they were being interviewed as a child and then showing them as the adult?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I would do if I was doing the film.
Yeah. Now, there's moments to do that and moments not to do that, but absolutely part of it.
Now, this, as far as this up on the message board, is there the backing of this film, is it backed by the John Mack Institute or partially?
Initially it was, and basically it's been on my back for a while, for a long time.
Wow. And with all that travel and everything, it sounds like you can really rack up some pretty heavy-duty expenses on something like this.
Absolutely. And we're now looking for finishing funds. And, it's been quite a weight financially, for sure.
Yeah. And need some producers out there. Anyone listening? Now, do you have a you don't actually have a website for this film yet.
No, that's coming. I know I haven't been very forthcoming with in the media, and I really, my whole feeling has been I want to get the story done, tell it right, and then talk about it. And you know what I mean? And the website's definitely on its way.
People at the time will be able to find the progress of the film as it's going?
We have a Facebook page, Aerial School Documentary Facebook page at this point, and the website is in development.
Okay, I will link the Facebook page.
We have a Twitter account.
Sure. Now,
Aerial Documentary Twitter.
Another question up there. Did the John Mack Institute actually withdraw their support for this film?
Oh, no. They've been with me the entire time.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yes, actually, I spoke with Will over there.
Yeah?
Nice guy. Yeah.
Good guy. Absolutely. He has been such a help, with John Mack's archives. And it's incredible what was kept, not just video, but documents and a lot of different things. He was invaluable in tracking a lot of the background information of the kids and John's personal recordings and all that.
So John himself, when he was there, do you happen to know how many days he spent there?
He spent a week there, it was 3 days of interviewing, 3 days at Aerial.
And you got to see the raw footage, not what we would see on any of these videos on, say, YouTube.
There's a lot more footage than what is on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I'm sure most of the profound things that the kids said were included in the films that we can watch.
Well, some of it. There's some very profound things that I have found that wouldn't be the things right at the top of the, I think it takes a little more introspection. Some very deep, profound things that were said, behaviors that they noticed, things like that, which I find fascinating because they corroborate with other people who've described similar things from other countries and around the planet. That stuff, that fascinates me as well. There's a lot that fascinates me on this particular case. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, are you actually done with all the shooting of this film and you're just in the editing process, or do you believe that there's still more shooting to do?
There's definitely going to be some more shooting to do, but it's 90, in the 90 percentile range of completely shot as far as that, as far as camera work, yeah, and interviews.
That's great. We only have like a minute and a half or so left here. So if you were to say to someone the most profound thing that you think that the kids said in this whole thing, would it be about the Earth, you know, the thoughts that they had, or is there something else that you think is even more interesting?
I think it's all interesting to me. The fact that they're describing something that is not supposed to exist is fascinating. The fact that somehow they were communicating with these creatures with no vocal speaking word, telepathy, which, and also the messages that were broadcast into their head, essentially. I think that all of that to me is fascinating.
I'm right there with you. I agree. Thanks so much. This has been a real pleasure. I'm sorry we got a little bit of a late start, so we have to end a little bit early. But really, really enjoyed speaking with you, Randall.
Yes, same here.
And we'll be looking for your website. And once you get that website going, let me know. And I'll be glad to post it on Podcast UFO. So that's it for the show today. If you miss any part of the show, you can catch it as a podcast and a whole bunch of other free podcasts at our website, podcastufo.com. Our guest next week will be UFO Skeptic, a UFO skeptic, and his name is Eric Schneider. I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today. Of course, our guests, Randall Nickerson, Keith Rowland for producing the Dark Matter Radio Network, Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse for the music, Alejandro Rojas for the news, Peggy Shunning for managing the Facebook page. You can check us out on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. We'll be here next week on the Dark Matter Radio Network and every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And don't forget to jump into the chat room. This is Martin Willis reminding you to keep your eyes to the sky.